Welcome to the theater. Take a seat, grab some popcorn, and get ready for another horror movie double bill. This is Friday Night Fratricide.
Good evening. Welcome back to Friday Night Fratricide. We welcome you into our humble abode, our spooky old dungeon where we record this from. You're not hearing all the creaks and moans.
The drops of water and the... No, it's not creaking. I'm trying to creak the mic stand.
I could have added it in post.
You could have done.
That would have been funny, but then you ruined it.
I ruined it by saying it didn't work. It would be even funnier if it creaked and then it...
And then you're like...
And then it didn't say anything anyway.
You're actually going deaf. Yeah. I'm sorry, Ewan.
What?
That's such a dad joke. I hate it. Right. What have we got for us this week? I didn't even introduce ourselves. Do we need introductions?
No, not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet.
What first?
What do you mean?
What do you mean? What do I mean? What do you mean?
You asked, have we done the introductions yet?
Yeah.
And I said, not yet.
No, I said, do we need introductions?
Oh, do we need introductions?
I don't know. Do we?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
I'm Ewan.
Are you?
I don't know. Am I?
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I've completely lost it.
Are you doing a bit?
I wasn't. I have actually just lost it. I haven't had my dinner yet.
I'm Ewan.
I'm hungry. You're Ewan.
And you're hungry.
And I'm hungry. Hi, Ewan. I'm Fraser. And this is Friday Night Fratricide with your boys, the Happy Brothers. This week, we have a very musical double bill. I mean, I was saying that as a joke, but actually there is a decent like soundtrack to each of these films. So, it's rappers.
Rappers.
Rappers in movies. Decidedly not actor rappers.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, who's like the best? LL Cool J's all right. He was pretty decent in Deep Blue Sea.
He's okay.
Who else is there?
I would say
Eminem. I mean, not in horror films, but like
I don't know if I've seen him act in much.
8 Mile. He's pretty good in 8 Mile.
Ice-T.
He's not good.
In Law and Order, is he bad? I've never watched Law and Order.
I have watched every single episode of Law and Order SVU.
With him.
He is not good.
Okay, there you go.
I love him. He's great. In like the conceptual sense, but he is not a good actor. Ice Cube.
Ice Cube's
all right as like a comedic actor. You seen 21 Jump Street? 22 Jump Street?
No, I haven't.
He's pretty good in that.
Is that the one where he says, "My name Jeff"?
My name Jeff.
You remember that? You remember my name Jeff?
I remember my name Jeff.
That was fun.
That was so fun.
That was a nice time.
Things were simpler back then.
That was before COVID, wasn't it?
It's like 2014 or something, yeah.
Oh,
I actually really love those films. They're like unironically great.
I've not seen them.
They're so funny.
I have not seen them.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about horror films. What you got for us this week, Ewan?
I've got Bones.
Okay.
I've got Snoop Dogg's Bones.
In a cabinet under the sink.
Yeah. It sure is a movie. It's got Snoop Dogg in it. And it's about a guy whose name is Bones.
I wasn't expecting his name to be Bones.
His name's Bones.
It's a little bit on the nose, yeah. Don't you think?
A little bit.
Jimmy Bones.
Jimmy Bones. Jimmy Bones.
Yeah.
James Bones.
Yeah. We'll get into it later.
Yeah.
But it surprised me in different ways.
Yeah. I didn't really know an awful lot about the film going into it.
No.
All I had really heard of is that it's sort of an underrated gem, and it's better than you would think a movie starring Snoop Dogg would be.
I would agree with that assessment.
And I do agree with that.
Yeah.
It is far from perfect, but it, you know what? It's pretty good, considering it's got Snoop Dogg in it.
It's all right. Yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah. What did you pick for this week? What was your choice?
My choice this week was 13 Ghosts, starring a pretty decent cast. Tony Shalhoub. It's F. Murray Abraham, right? Yeah, that is F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, it's F. Murray Abraham.
Matthew Lillard.
It's absolutely incredible, Matthew Lillard.
Shannon Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
And our resident rapper, Radiga. Never heard of her before this.
Neither had I.
I had no idea who she was. I'm really sorry. But she does. I think she does the song at the end, over the credits.
I would assume so.
Which was fine. Mm-hmm. It was a 2001 credit song.
Yeah.
So, this film's kind of been on my watch list for a while. I see a lot of people doing like video essays on it and stuff. There's a lot of lore like behind the scenes of the film, which isn't really prominent in the film itself.
Yeah.
Which is a bit annoying. But all that's kind of interesting. And yeah, he tell you what I should have done, actually, is at the end of our previous episode, is warned anyone who's watching along with us.
Yeah.
That this has a severe epilepsy warning.
Oh, yeah.
If you did not have epilepsy before.
You do now.
You sure do now. Yeah. Oh, my God. I knew it was a thing. Like, there is a, like, warning on the, like, IMDb page saying there was stuff raised concerns about how bad it is in this. I was not anticipating it being that bad. Like, my eyes hurt watching the first 15 minutes of this film.
It's pretty constant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you're listening to it now and you've not watched the film yet and you happen to have sensitive eyes or brain,
yeah,
be careful.
Be careful.
Because this is really legitimately horrendous. Mm-hmm.
I don't think either of these films were terrible. That's as much as I'm going to give you as a clue to my opinions at this point.
Yeah.
We'll get into them. Which one do you want to talk about first?
I feel like Bones has more of a... I don't know. They're both 2001.
Yeah.
But I feel like Bones has more of a late 90s feel. I feel like it's...
That, yeah, that's fair enough.
Feels a bit older. I see so what you mean. If you want to start with Bones.
I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. So Bones is about your man, Jimmy Bones. Jimmy Bones, who died in the late 70s. He was like a big man in his community in this neighborhood in whichever town they're supposed to be in. And he died, and then the neighborhood kind of went to shit afterwards. And it's about a group of people who, well, there's two brothers and their friend and their stepsister buy an old house, which turns out to be Jimmy Bones's old house, in order to turn it into a nightclub, because they want to try and, well, it's mostly just that they want to make money and become famous, but it's also partly that they're like, oh, we're going to revitalize the neighborhood or whatever. Because they come from like a rich family. Their dad's very wealthy and he grew up in the neighborhood and then moved away, and he's very dismissive of it and doesn't like the neighborhood anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, they go into this house, and then they meet one of their neighbors who's been in the neighborhood for a really long time, played by Pam Grier. She's like a psychic medium fortune teller, whatever. And her daughter, who is also has the gift supposedly, but she just uses it to make art that's sort of creepy and of dead people. Which is fun. She's played by, I didn't write the actress's name down, but she was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Bianca Lawson?
Yeah, is that her?
I think.
She was in, I'm bad with the actress's names, but she was in Buffy.
Who was she in Buffy?
Is it Kendra? That's like the second Slayer.
Oh, she's got that,
bad Jamaican accent.
Yeah, awful sort of Caribbean accent.
Like Caribbean accent, yeah. Yeah, it's her. So yeah, they like live in the house because they're going to be remodeling it and turning it into this nightclub. They start discovering a bunch of weird stuff. There's a big dog is a big boy.
He is a big boy. He looks very fluffy.
He's scary.
He looks very vicious. I wouldn't want that dog walking about my house, if I'm being honest.
Like, I have to assume that the actor dog that played the evil dog...
Oh, he's a good boy.
...was a very good boy.
Oh, he'd be a good boy.
Very good. He's kicking about. You see him being very violent towards somebody right at the start of the film. He's like attacking another person that lives in the neighborhood. We don't really know who he is.
Yeah,
we get that there's like something going on with him, but we don't know.
He's like a neighbor watching the house.
He looks out over the house and he's got a gun.
Yeah,
and he's like really paranoid and sort of locked in. Locked in the sense that he locked himself in his house. Not like he's locked in. You know what I mean? That's what the kids say nowadays. Did you know that?
He's
It's the opposite of tweaking. Is when you're locked in.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that the...
Do you know that? Those are the two states of being now for young people.
Tweaking's like on drugs.
You're either tweaking or you're locked in. And locked in is the good one and tweaking is the bad one.
Who says that? Have you been on the TikToks, Ewan?
On the TikToks. Yes.
You've been learning your...
I've been learning my young...
vocabulary through the TikToks.
Yes. My young people's vernacular.
Define locked in for me then.
That's the good one. It's the opposite of tweaking.
But what does tweaking mean?
That's the bad one. It's the opposite of locked in. I don't know. I don't know what any of this means. I just know that it's a thing that people say.
Have you seen Idiocracy?
No, I've not.
Okay. This conversation reminds me of...
Isn't Idiocracy just like a massive... It's like incredibly pro-eugenics. Is that not the entire point of Idiocracy? That it's like horrible.
It's... I guess you could look at it that way. Yeah, I guess, arguably. Yeah,
because
I never really thought of it like that.
People are having children and the country gets ruined. Like, that's kind of the point of the film.
I actually never really thought of it from that angle. But now I can't think of it any other angle. So, thanks, Ewan.
Sorry. There you go.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a comedy, but... There you go.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've ruined things.
There's a conversation in that reminded me of what
that's
you were
because
saying.
I'm tweaking. Anyway, so this guy, yeah. Anyway, there's the guy, there's the neighbor. Something's up with him, but we don't really know what. And then there's a cop also who's kicking about. There's like this gross looking cop. He has like facial prosthetics.
He has like the
clearly
penguin.
Like, yeah, he's got like jowls.
Colin Farrell.
Onto his face, like Colin Farrell.
Deal,
penguin.
Yeah. I was wondering. I couldn't quite tell, but it looked like he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's purely because you see him when he was younger, like 20 odd years ago, and they needed to make him look visibly older,
yeah.
Even though they didn't do that with any of the other characters, which is quite funny.
You've heard the phrase, black don't crack, right?
That is very true. They have the other guy. Okay, yeah, spoilers, like big spoiler for the film, but I also did see it coming a mile away when I was watching this. It turns out that the dad of the guys that buy the house, that is the really rich one, he was like Jimmy Bones's best friend.
Yeah.
And he like betrayed him for money because he was like, oh, this corrupt cop wants to start selling crack in the neighborhood, but you need Jimmy Bones's permission. And then Jimmy Bones doesn't give them permission, so they murder him.
Yeah,
and that's why Jimmy Bones died. And it's like these various people who were there when he got murdered are now the ones that are getting tormented by the evil spirit.
Well, only after he's unleashed.
After he's unleashed.
Yeah.
They unleash him by being in the house.
I guess, yeah.
Sort of. They find his body. They find his like skeleton. He was buried in the basement.
Yeah, eventually. But at the start, it's just them being there.
They're
kind
just
of
sort of there, and you see the ghost still kicking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. We gradually unfold this plot, finding out that there was like a conspiracy to have Jimmy Bones killed. And then gradually, as people start to die, there's like the friend, the two guys, the brother's friend gets gotten because he steals the ring off of the dead body.
Yeah.
The one that's DJing.
Yep.
And then he gets killed. And I think that's kind of what brings Jimmy Bones back properly after he dies.
Yeah, so the dog, Catherine Isabel's character, yeah, kind of adopts the dog,
uh-huh,
semi-adopts the dog, and feeds it. And whenever she feeds it meat, you see the bones in the basement kind of like regrowing a little bit.
Was it when she was feeding the dog meat?
Yeah, but then when... he gets killed. Is it Maurice?
Maurice. The dog eats him.
The dog eats him, and the bones regrow. Which, by the way, some of the coolest practical effects.
Very cool practical effects at that point. The effects in this are very split, because it's like 2001, unsurprisingly, there is some bad CGI in here.
Yeah.
But it's very mixed. I think some of the CGI is used quite sparingly, and when it's used sparingly, I think it still works. It's like, it's not so in your face that you notice that it looks bad. There's a couple of shots where like they linger on, there's like a ghosty figure, and they linger on it just long enough that it starts to look a bit rubbish. Yeah. You start to see through the cracks, but generally it's used sparingly enough that it works, even though it doesn't look amazing. There's one shot when like a big shadow comes up on the wall, and it reminded me sort of the Babadook, and I thought it was quite a cool effect, which obviously must have been done digitally, and it's pretty cool. But the practical effects of the bones.
The bones. The bones of Jimmy Bones.
That's why he's called that.
No, but he was already called that before he became Bones.
Hmm?
But then, don't we all become Bones?
We are all Bones, eventually. When he gets back and it's like the like tendrils of his veins like growing around the bones. And then,
that was cool, man.
It was. It was very Hellraiser. It was really cool.
Yeah.
I liked it. That was fun. So he comes back and then he starts hunting people down. He kills the guy who lives across the street. It turns out he was like his bodyguard who like failed to save him and then sort of turned on him. It's a bit loose. The whole thing is that he's like getting revenge on the people who wronged him, but some of the people didn't really wrong him.
Yeah, the bodyguard was basically threatened at gunpoint to put his fingerprints on the knife that killed Jimmy Bones.
Like, after he had already been fatally shot and stabbed multiple times. So I was watching, I was kind of like, it's really not his fault. I don't think he deserves to be getting all this. Like, I get that he was there.
Yeah.
And they kind of make the point of, like, he sort of says, like, you were going to die, like, you were dead anyway. There's nothing I could have done. And he's like, oh, well, you could have died with me. And it's like, that hardly makes you seem like a justifiable like vengeance ghost.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's an unfair reason to go for vengeance. But whatever. Anyway. The corrupt cop is an absolute fucking creep. He's great.
Oh yeah.
He's so horrible. And he gets got and he gets his head cut off.
Good.
Then there's also another guy who has sort of taken over. He's now like the gangster in the
neighborhood. Something.
Eddie something. I was going to say Eddie Money, but that's not his name.
Eddie Money. E-Money.
E-Money.
Eddie Mac.
Eddie Mac. There you go. He was working with the corrupt cop back in the 70s to be like, you should start selling crack in the neighborhood or whatever. And he sort of took over from Jimmy Bones and then ran the neighborhood into the ground by selling people a bunch of drugs, and it ruined everything, oddly enough. And so he goes and gets revenge on him, and then gets revenge on the rich guy that used to be his partner that sold him out. And then the end of the film, and then because Pam Grier was his girlfriend, him and Pam Grier were romantically involved. Turns out that Pam Grier's daughter is also Jimmy Bones' daughter.
Oh, twist, didn't see that coming.
About halfway through this film I made a note that just described the entire rest of the plot. I was like, okay, I see where this is going. She turns out to be Jimmy Bones' daughter, and they turn out to be the sons of the rich guy's gonna be the guy that sold him out.
Yeah.
And then that's why he's getting revenge on them. Sort of. Whatever. They gradually start getting killed off. They go back to the house. The end of the film gets very messy. I really lost track of what was happening at the end of the film.
It becomes very...
it's a bit all over the place. Yeah. They're in like weird flesh tunnels in the basement.
They kind of like go to like hell, I guess. I don't really know.
And then
a different dimension.
They're in some place that I guess is back in the house, but it's like there's all the candles everywhere, and then Jimmy Bones and Pam Grier are like, he's like, oh, you can be with me forever now. I'm back. I'm a ghost.
Ooh. Yeah.
And then she kills herself by setting herself on fire because It was her bloodstained clothes were like the things that were connecting him to the...
Yeah, keeping him alive. Or not alive, but like...
Like tethered to the the mortal realm or whatever. So she sets herself on fire and sacrifices herself. And then Jimmy Bones goes and the last survivor... One of the brothers dies.
Yes, I can't remember their names.
I can't remember.
Remember Maurice's name.
Maurice is the friend.
Yeah.
But there's the two guys.
I'm gonna look it up.
Googling it. One of them dies. The other one, who is Pam Grier's daughter's, he's having a romance with her. The two of them escape at the end of the film and get out of the house as it's like burning down, and then the final shot of the film is it turns out that she's like possessed by Jimmy Bones or whatever, and she vomits a bunch of maggots on him, and then the film ends.
Patrick. Yeah. And Bill?
Patrick and Bill. Classic gangster names from 2001.
Patrick's the main one.
Yeah.
And Bill, I think, is the one that gets...
Bill's the one that
gets got in the flesh tunnel.
Yeah. I didn't remember how he died. I knew that he died at some point towards the end. Yeah, and Patrick and Pam Grier's daughter survive, and then he gets gotten.
Yeah, so I wasn't really sure. Like, I guess she was possessed by Bones?
I suppose, yeah.
Rather than her just, like, turning evil?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, the... we see earlier on, because the dog turns into a woman in order to kill Maurice.
Yes.
And then kills him, and then is eating him, and then attacks Patrick and starts vomiting a bunch of maggots on him.
Yes.
It's like projectile vomiting a bunch of maggots.
My dog has done that several times. It's
projectile vomited maggots?
Into my face.
Into your face.
Yeah.
Grim.
Yeah, that's a thing that's happened.
Has he ever turned into a woman and killed one of your friends?
I'd have to check my notes.
Yeah. You have to check with your friends if any of them are dead.
Yeah.
Harry would never do that. He's a very good boy.
He is a good boy. He is known to throw up quite violently, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's it, right? That's like, that's kind of the film.
That is it. There's a lot of, the flash forward, flashback stuff throughout the film, which... I'm usually quite critical of flashbacks, but I think here it kind of works because it unfolds gradually.
Yeah.
Rather than giving us one lump big flashback scene.
Yeah.
Here it's kind of broken up, and it does, like, it is predictable, right?
Mm-hmm.
The plot twist is predictable, but not so predictable that everyone would see it coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that I'm saying we're smarter than everyone, but like, if you're just a casual movie watcher, rather than if you've seen another horror movie in your life,
mm-hmm.
you probably know what's coming,
mm-hmm.
but you know, if it just so happened that you don't really care about films and you stick this on, it is a kind of fun twist, that you know, he was betrayed and whatnot. One thing I didn't like was how Bones was portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really keep it consistent. Like, he was portrayed in the flashbacks, he was portrayed as this kind of like benevolent figure in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
He kind of kept everything.
He was very nice to everybody.
Yeah.
He was very wealthy, and he ran numbers. I had to Google what that was exactly. It's like running a lottery.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know exactly what that means. There you go. And that was good for the community, I suppose, and also made him pretty rich.
Yeah.
So he was like the leader of the community, and he used to be very generous and like give kids money for ice cream when he saw them on the street.
Yeah.
And they had little songs about how nice he was.
But then, later on, they kind of, after he comes back to life, they kind of switch it and he becomes the villain. Like, we're almost supposed to sympathize with the guy, the brother's dad.
Yeah.
And with the drug dealer and the cop. But also, we're not, because they explicitly show us how horrible the cop is.
Yeah.
And it's like, this feels inconsistent. Who are we supposed to root for here?
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I like knowing who to root for. Even if they're complex characters, don't have their complexities like clash against themselves over the course of the film. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was a bit annoyed with that.
Yeah. There are issues with this film. I really liked it conceptually. I thought the plot was interesting. Like the idea of having a character like Jimmy Bones getting wrongfully murdered and coming back as a ghost and hunting people down, and that whole shtick was interesting and was done relatively well. A lot of the characters were quite nice and quite fun. Most of the main group of protagonists.
Mm.
I think the dynamic of two brothers and their stepsister is kind of, it's unique enough that that was fun for
it's
me.
It's a bit weird.
I enjoyed that. Especially considering Catherine Isabel is white and the other two main characters aren't. It's like you don't often see that, like an interracial family as protagonists of a film.
Yeah.
It was pretty unique in that sense, and it is nice seeing that.
He does. Is it Patrick that makes jokes about one of them being lighter skinned?
Yeah, Patrick makes jokes about Maurice.
Maurice,
I think the implication, I don't know because I've not checked the actor and they don't really go into detail in the character. I think the implication is that he's mixed race.
Right.
And they kind of make comment because he refers to himself as Martin Luther King's dream, which is very funny.
Yeah.
In that he's the melting pot, that's what he calls himself.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Again, it's like stuff like that, it's kind of nice just having characters that are mixed race, having interracial families. It's not just like, oh, this is like a character, this is a film where a lot of the characters are black, therefore all of the characters are black, and there's one white character who's a corrupt cop villain. Like, that's, I get why people would make films like that.
It's accurate for those neighborhoods.
Yeah. It is, unfortunately, also does make it a little bit cliched and predictable.
Like,
that's true. It's nice having a bit of variation within that.
Yeah.
Is my point.
Yeah. And also Catherine Isabel.
And also, yeah, you would never say no to Catherine Isabel, right? She's great. The main issues that I have with the film is I think sometimes they pushed things too far in the sense that, like, the editing and the cinematography, they were like, oh, we're going to, like, get, like, lots of really, like, fast zooming in shots, and it's, like, very active, very, like, heavy on the motion. Yeah. The camera's zooming around and quick cuts and all that. And it's, like, if you had just dialed it back a bit, it would have been a lot better. Like, they pushed that. It was too much. And then scenes toward the end when Bones is going on his killing spree, it suddenly goes, it like steers into comedy when he's like, he's cut off the Eddie Mac's head.
Yeah, they got like the
talking heads of him and Lupovich.
The
corrupt cop.
Loopy Lou, the detective.
The two of them. He's got their like severed heads and they're like talking to each other and it's like putting in like weird jokes and quips.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work because it's totally out of whack with the rest of the film. And I think if they had just like not pushed it to put something like that in, it would have worked better as a film. It would have felt more cohesive. You could have spent time focusing on like the actually interesting parts of the plot.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. I feel like after that point, basically the point where Bones comes back, you've kind of got, it kind of shifts into more of a horror film than it did before.
Yeah.
You know, it shifts from this sort of mysterious mystery horror into like slasher horror at the end. But then, yeah, like you said, they added this bit of comedy in that wasn't really there before, more than just the sort of natural comedy of a group of friends being together.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, shifted things too far in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But overall, pretty good stuff to like. I was pleasantly surprised by how good this film was.
It was, yeah, more than I was expecting from a 2001 horror film starring Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
But there you go. What did you rank it in the end?
I gave it 3 stars.
Okay.
So not an absolutely incredible film, but pretty good. I think worth watching if you like Snoop Dogg.
No, don't watch it if you like Snoop Dogg.
Worth watching if you kind of want to watch like an African-American led horror film.
Yeah.
I think you could do a lot worse.
That's a fair assessment.
The plot features a lot of elements that you could only get when it's being made by Black creators. Like the idea of like that sense of community and the idea of like the police presence in the film being very negative, obviously.
Yeah.
And like the family dynamics in it. Like it's good seeing stuff like that reflected in a film. And I think it's done well. And it's an interesting plot and it's got some good kills and it's got some good practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I think it struggles a bit with the lack of budget, maybe production value.
Mm.
It feels like a sort of straight to DVD. I don't know if it was straight to DVD or not.
It may well have been. I know what you mean.
When a film like this and a plot like this and a cast like this probably would have benefited from a bit more exposure. And I don't want to say studio interference, but studio contribution, maybe.
Yeah,
financially and just pulling things together. That's not something I would say often. But I don't know. There was just something about the scale of the film that felt quite small. You know, it takes place in a house on a street, and it feels like a house in a street on a set.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it doesn't feel like a full, when part of the plot is about a neighborhood that has changed, it doesn't feel like a neighborhood. It feels like a film set with this creepy old house built on it.
Yeah. You don't see much of the rest of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You basically just see this one street that is empty apart from the one house.
And I think that's probably due to lack of budget and financial issues.
Probably, yeah.
Which, you know, like, unavoidable, fair enough. But it does impact the film. It does give it this sort of cheaper vibe.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because it is an interesting film. It has got its charm. It's got Snoop Dogg in it.
Yeah.
Who's not a good actor, by the way.
No, he's not.
But he's kind of fun. He's got a couple of good lines in it. I got a natural high. Supernatural high. That was a good line.
Yeah, that was a good line.
Yeah, not said very well by me. No. I do not but sound like Snoop Dogg, but it's fun. I'm not going to try and imitate Snoop Dogg, because that might be racist.
It might just be. Yep.
So yeah, it is worth watching, I would say. The practical effects were a real highlight, like actively stood out to me. The scenes with Bones coming back to life, the scene with the like people wall,
yeah,
and the creatures coming out of the wall, that was really quite unsettling, and felt like it was something out of a better film.
Yeah.
Which, it's like that's a compliment to Bones. Like, the fact that this felt like it came from a better film makes me think more highly of this film, that they were able to pull something like that off.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2.5.
2.5.
2.5.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how good it actually was compared to what I thought it was going to be, but it still kind of missed the mark on the whole. I think it's got a B movie charm. It's got a straight to DVD charm to it.
It did. Sorry, I was just looking that up. It didn't go straight to DVD. It did get a theatrical release.
Okay.
It did not do well in theaters.
Yeah.
It barely made back half its budget.
Okay.
But I think when looking at it on Wikipedia reminded me of the fact that part of the point of the film is that it's supposed to be an homage to blaxploitation films.
Yes.
Which probably does lend itself a little bit into the idea of it feeling quite cheap and low budget. I'm far from an expert on blaxploitation films. I didn't really get that from watching the film, that it was that reminiscent of it.
Can't say I did.
Beyond the flashback scenes of them going to the 70s and having them wearing very 70s looking outfits, and the fact that it's got Pam Grier in it. Like, there's not that much else about it that felt especially blaxploitation to
me. It didn't feel so cheap.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as funny.
Yeah.
But it did have, like, bits of those elements.
They just didn't
quite lean into it as much as they maybe could have.
Yeah. Like a Black Dynamite.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But then that's a higher production value
makes it look cheap. They can put the effort into making it look very old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I can absolutely understand why some people say that it's a hidden gem. I get it. I get the appeal of it. It just, wasn't totally for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're not, well, I suppose the trend has been broken by now, but we are back into having a film with a dog dying. A Snoop Dogg. Oh, God, that felt so good. Right, okay. We're going to move on now, if that's okay.
I'm going to turn off the recording and then step out the window.
You're going to beat the shit out of me. Put me in the ground.
And then you can come back to life by possessing a dog and forcing it to eat human flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Shall we move on?
Yes.
You've got a little intermission treat for us this week.
I have a little intermission game for you. So, your choice for this film before this week was 13 Ghosts.
It was.
Right. Which was starring the rap artist that is starring in it, Ra Digga. Was a member of, I don't know if you know much about Ra Digga's rap career. Okay, good. Perfect. So Ra Digga was a member of a hip-hop collective, which was led by Halloween Resurrection's own Busta Rhymes.
Okay.
It was called the Flip Mode Squad.
Yep.
And I had a look at the names of some of the other people that were in the Flip Mode Squad, and some of them had very funny names. So I've put together a little game that I like to call Flip Mode or Flop Mode. I'm going to read out some names.
Okay.
Of some rap artists.
I would just before you start, are these like stage names or their real names?
Stage names.
Okay, that's fine.
These are not like, I'm not just being like, hey, this person has a funny name.
Cool. Yep. That's
fine.
As much
as I do that sometimes, I feel like it borders on racially insensitive. I'm not doing it this time.
Okay. No, as long as they're stage names, that's fine.
Stage names that I happen to think are funny.
Okay.
I have, I think, 10.
Okay.
I have 10.
And I need to guess if they're real or not.
You need to tell me which ones you think are real and which ones you think are fake. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, cool. First up, DJ Scratch.
That sounds like a real name, so I'm going to say that it's fake.
That is real. Okay. That is a real one. DJ Scratch is a real member of the
Squad. I thought you were going to trick me. I don't. You're playing mind games.
I am. Second, Florida Governor.
Ron DeSantis. fake.
That is fake.
Flop mode.
That is made up. That was flop mode. Third, Noah Balboa.
Noah Balboa. Flop mode.
No, Noah Balboa. No, sorry, you're right. Noah Balboa is fake.
Fake,
it is made up.
Who made? Did you make them up?
I made them up.
Okay.
I made them up. I did, like, I Googled fake rapper names. All right. And there were like some some of them were entirely from my own brain. Some of them were like cobbled together from bits that were there that I thought were funny. Okay, number four, Lord Have Mercy.
Flip mode.
Yes, Lord Have Mercy is real.
That's dope. I love that name.
Dennis.
Flip mode.
No,
oh no.
Not real.
I hope that was okay. That was his stage name.
Sirius.
It's flip mode.
Yeah, Sirius is real.
Sirius, but Dennis isn't.
Dennis isn't real. Sirius is real.
Dennis isn't real is a great name for a band.
Dennis isn't
by the real. Way.
Yeah. Okay. Uncle Zoo.
Uncle, do rappers call themselves Uncle these days? Well, Flip Mode is probably, 20 years ago?
Mm.
Yeah, let's say Flip Mode.
No, that's not real. Uncle Zoo is not real. Papoose.
Flop Mode.
Papoose is real. that was a real guy.
Okay.
Okay. Harriet Thugman.
There's no way. There is no way somebody is cutting about calling themselves Harriet Thugman. I hope it's true. Flip mode.
It is real.
Yes!
But this is actually a little bit of a tricky one.
Okay.
This is a bit of a trick question, so I'm glad you got it right. Harriet Thugman is another alternate stage name of Radigger.
That was, really?
She went by the name Harriet Thugman for a while.
That's dope. I like that.
Yeah.
It's okay. Ridiculous, but I like it.
It is pretty ridiculous. And the last one, Flippant Ben.
No way.
No, Flippant Ben's made up. He's not real.
But that is great.
He's flop mode.
He's flop mode. You're right, that was fun. I did enjoy that. And I've got a new bad name out of it as well.
Dennis is fake.
Dennis isn't real.
Dennis isn't real.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I properly cracked myself up. It just popped into my head. You know what would be a really funny name for a rapper? Dennis.
you don't really watch Community. Troy, when he's doing his acting course, mm-hmm. he's trying to think up a stage name. And he's like, what is it? It's I'm just torn between Trevor St. McGoodbody and David. That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
Dennis. What's up, guys? My name's Dennis. It's a song from the new one.
The new one. Yeah, okay. There you go. That was flip mode or flop mode.
That was fun. I need to come down a little bit off that high though. I need to get my head back in the game. We could easily, like, I would quite happily just do a full episode of
flip mode or flop mode.
Yeah. Right, shall we move on?
Mm-hmm.
Back into the cinema. Theatre. Where are we? What did we? Theatre.
Theatre, sure.
Yeah. 13 Ghosts is up next. Again, 2001. We got that early 2000s horror movie charm to it. It was directed by Steve Beck, who he worked on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Mm.
And Hunt for Red October as visual effects artist.
There you go.
But his only two directing credits are 13 Ghosts and Ghost Ship.
Oh.
Which, I don't know if you've seen Ghost Ship.
I haven't.
Have you at least seen the DVD cover of it?
Yes.
It gives off very similar vibes to 13 Ghosts.
It does. The only thing I know about Ghost Ship is there's the scene when everyone's dancing on the dance floor.
That's and then, the like, opening sequence.
The
yeah.
wire cuts yeah. them all in half.
It's a very, very well renowned.
Oh, I think he maybe has a thing for cutting people in half. There's a few people get cut in half in this film.
Yeah, that's true. They do. Is that a thing? Is that a fetish thing?
Maybe.
Could be. Dirty, dirty Steve
Have a
Beck.
Bisection fetish.
No. Right, moving on. So 13 Ghosts, if you've not seen it, is one hell of a seizure ride.
Yeah.
And that is putting it very lightly. I honestly thought they were exaggerating, because there is notes, like any article you see about 13 Ghosts, there's something is said about the seizure warning on it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was over exaggerating. It is very much not. It is absolutely wild from the first scene. So we're following, it opens with following Cyrus, this rich evil man.
Guy. He's referred to in the newspaper as an adventurer.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
He's got that kind of evil adventurer vibe. And his assistant, his psychic assistant, Dennis.
Dennis. Is that his name?
His name's Dennis.
Oh, fucking hell.
Brilliant. It all comes full circle.
Incredible.
And they're hunting a ghost in a scrapyard. The if it wasn't so seizure inducing, what they go for with the ghost is kind of cool. Like, they sort of cut between some scenes where the ghost is invisible and like chucking bodyguards about, and then cut to a scene where it is visible and you see them doing it, and they do that throughout the film. It is kind of cool, but just the editing and the hard cuts of them doing it is too much. Mm-hmm. It's way too much. But yeah, we're kind of vaguely introduced to the plot. They're looking for 13 ghosts and they only have 12, and Dennis is unsure what the 13th ghost is. But they capture the ghost and Cyrus is killed along with like a reporter, researcher guy. Mm-hmm. There's a man and a woman who turn up trying to stop Cyrus, and the guy gets killed along with Cyrus. And then that kicks off the main plot of the film, which is Tony Shalhoub and his family, his daughter, played by Shannon Elizabeth. I can't remember. What's his name? Arthur. The daughter's name is Kathy?
Yeah.
I believe. The son, Jimmy?
Jimmy.
Is it Jimmy? Bobby.
Bobby.
They're all the same. Who cares?
Billy.
And then, yeah, Radiga plays Maggie, who's mm-hmm. like the housekeeper, babysitter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's live-in or not. But
I don't know.
One thing I couldn't understand was, right, she comes along with them on this adventure, which I'll get to in a second, but they also claim to be poor, like flat broke.
Yeah.
How babysitters aren't cheap. Live-in babysitters are even less cheap.
Like a live-in babysitter that you blatantly don't need.
Yeah.
Like one of your children is Shannon Elizabeth.
Yeah.
She's like 25, right?
Yeah.
And the boy is maybe like 10. Or maybe a bit younger than that. But he's like school age. Like, he's spending most of his time in school.
Yep.
And Tony Shalhoub is a teacher, so he's like only gonna be working school hours anyway.
That's true.
They don't need a live-in babysitter.
Yeah.
They also then make comments about, like, oh, well, the reason that we hire her is to, like, cook and clean around the house. The house is fucking filthy, and she's a shit cook.
Yep.
What's she there for? Who was Radiga sleeping with that they wrote her this character into the film?
Well, she's only been in, like, 3 films as well, like, as an actor.
I do not know what is going on. I don't mean to criticize her acting talent. Like, she's not a bad actress.
She's just not the worst.
It doesn't make sense that this character is in the film. It's pretty obvious that they just sort of, like, wrote her in. It's weird.
Very strange. But yeah, so Arthur, the patriarch of the family, receives a visit from a lawyer who shows him this very elaborate video of his great-uncle, Cyrus, who bequeaths him his house in the event of his death. Arthur is like, oh, it could be a new start for us. It's a big house. He was a rich man. I didn't really know him that well, but we could go and live in that house and we'd be happy. I'm like, that sounds... Don't you think that sounds a bit too good to be true, my man? Mm-hmm. Really? I should say, they're also suffering from Arthur's wife, who died in a fire and apparently didn't have life insurance, because if she did, they'd be fine for money.
I figure they must, like, they had a nice house as well. Like,
yeah.
They had, like, a nice suburban house.
And it burned down, so, like, they didn't have house insurance either.
Yeah, their financial troubles make no sense.
Yeah. I think he's just, maybe he was a gambler. And maybe that's why they didn't have house insurance. He spent it all on bun. I don't know. So they go out to Cyrus's house, and it's very weird and very elaborate. It's made of, it's all glass, and it's the lock for the door is like weird electronic. It takes like 2 minutes to open the door. Like, come on, what's mm-hmm. that about? It's got a weird like system to open the door. It's all gears and shit. Like, at this point, you'd be like, what is going on? This isn't a house. This is a
weird museum.
Yeah. This is an attraction. This isn't...
Yeah, it is. It's like a motorway attraction.
But whatever. They go in and they investigate, and Kathy is over the moon, and Bobby's excited to get his own room, and the babysitter's going to live with him still, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. The lawyer's been a bit weird and kind of forcing Arthur to sign the documents and leave him in the house, but Dennis has shown up disguised as an electrician to kind of see and sneak in and what's going on, and we come to understand that the house is in fact not a house at all. It's actually a prison for all the ghosts that have been captured.
Mm-hmm.
The 13 ghosts, or 12 ghosts at this point,
yep.
I guess. And we don't really know what's going on, but when the lawyer tries to leave, he triggers a trap that locks the house down and unleashes the ghosts. And this is where I kind of lost interest in the film.
Yeah.
It from here until like near enough the end, it is just following different characters walking down the same hallway.
Yeah.
And occasionally encountering a ghost of various description.
Like, the house, like you say, like, it's a glass house. All of the walls are this, like, shatterproof glass that's got, like, magic writing on it.
It's like Latin, yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's for trapping all the ghosts in. But it just makes every single room and corridor in the house look identical.
Yeah.
And that makes the film incredibly boring.
Yeah. Like, honestly, the whole middle section of the film
looks identical.
Yeah.
You could take a clip from this film and you would not be able to place how far through the film it is. Because yep. after the segment right at the beginning in Tony Shalhoub's house, mm-hmm. or the bit in the scrapyard, and then the bit in Tony Shalhoub's house, it's all takes place in this one house where every room looks identical.
Yep. We get that the lawyer gets killed very promptly. He mm-hmm. gets like sliced in half by a door. Yeah,
bisectulated.
I was trying to think of a way to bisect.
Kind of sounds like bisexual.
Yeah, that was the joke, but yeah. I couldn't
you were like,
I couldn't close, right? I couldn't close on the joke.
You were like three quarters of the way there.
I know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get there. He gets killed very quickly, and then no one really gets killed yeah. for the rest of the film until the end. That whole middle section of the film, they're all in different parts of the house, and they're all trying to like reunite. They eventually get saved at one point. Like, Tony Shalhoub gets attacked by one of the ghosts, and they get saved by the researcher from the start of the film, mm-hmm. the alive one, obviously. And she turns out to actually be evil, but she helps them for a while, mm-hmm. fighting the ghosts off. One of the ghosts is Arthur's dead wife,
yeah.
by the way, for some reason. I don't know why she was captured, but...
Yeah.
They do kind of explain they need like distinct spirits. They need like 12 distinct spirits.
There's a ghost zodiac.
Yeah.
It's like archetypes of ghosts. And some of them are way too specific.
I know.
For me to believe that this is like a type of ghost.
I know. I'll go into the details on the ghosts later because it's kind of fun, but it's not really explained very well in the film. It's just there are a bunch of different ghost designs. Some of them get like literally seconds of screen time.
Yeah.
Because they flash onto screen and then flash away and never see them again, which is very annoying. The main ones that we see are the Naked Lady. Mm-hmm. The she does have her boobies out.
Yep.
The Naked Lady
ghost.
Who I think killed herself in a bathtub. and she kind of stalks Kathy and
maybe or got murdered in the
or bathtub, got murdered in the bathtub. There's a big boy with a big hammer who's got like railroad spikes nailed into him, and then there's a baseball player as well who causes a bit of damage.
Is that like the greaser guy?
The greaser
like
guy.
Like a greaser, yeah.
Yeah, and that's like it. And Arthur's wife, Arthur's dead wife.
And are like there's the guy with the box on his head.
Yeah. But he kind of drags the babysitter
for
about.
For like a bit,
and then,
but not that prominently.
Yeah, there's the big fat baby man.
There's a big fat baby
and
man.
And his small mother. What?
I'm sorry, it's just really funny.
It's like, very strange.
What are the types of ghosts? Well, you've got like poltergeists, vengeful spirits, big fat babies, and their tiny little mothers. You know them? You know how you get them all the time?
The common archetype for
ghosts. Absolute, like, it's a staple in the ghost community.
Yeah. It's annoying, right? Because the concept behind each of the ghosts is interesting, but they only go into detail for like, again, literally like seconds. There's one scene where they spend like 10 seconds at best describing each ghost, other than like the main ones that we see, and all the rest was done in like behind the scenes. It was done in like DVD booklets or behind the scenes featurettes, and it's like, you put so much thought into the lore behind this film and you didn't tell us any of it. Yeah. In the film itself. Like, come on, man. So, yeah, the film kind of carries on. We get Matthew Lillard is great. He just totally goes for it. Over the top, hammy nonsense. And it was kind of seeing him that I had this revelation, like, halfway through the film. This feels like Scooby-Doo for adults.
Yeah.
Work with me on this, right?
Okay.
You've got the setup of a group of friends, in this case family, going to an old haunted house that was randomly bequeathed to them by a weird old uncle.
Yeah.
And then they're going around the house getting chased by a bunch of different unique ghosts.
In and out of identical corridors.
That... like, it sounds like a plot of a Scooby-Doo episode.
And then the ending kind of goes back into that.
Yeah.
Turns out...
the whole... yeah.
Not even a ghost. He's just a guy.
Cyrus...
he's still alive.
...didn't actually die.
He's just a
dude. He's not the 13th ghost. He's there. Like, that's such a twist. He faked his own death.
They pull his face off.
And he's behind the whole thing.
And it's still him underneath. Imagine they did that in Scooby-Doo one time. They were like... let's see what the villain is, and they pull the mask off, and it's just like an identical head
man underneath.
Yeah, that'd be really funny.
But you could, like, you could totally see if this was toned down, if the violence and the boobies and the language was toned down, this could be an episode of Scooby-Doo. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
like once I had that in my head, I was like, wow, this, like, yeah, okay, I can, yeah. But yeah, as you said, the Matthew Lillard's character gets killed. He has like a vision of him getting killed off early on in the film, and then that prophecy comes to pass. But he still like helps them as a ghost.
Just a little bit.
A little bit. Cyrus reappears, and yeah, we figure out that he's not actually a ghost. He faked his death along with the Kalina, her name is, the researcher lady. I don't really know what her job was. Like, I guess researcher?
She was just there.
Reporter? I don't know.
She says she's a spirit relocation specialist or something.
Yeah.
She's like, I rescue ghosts. And it's like, they're violent, horrible monsters. Like, these aren't...
yeah. Because he did, like Matthew Lillard says earlier on in the film, like, these are... not all ghosts become, like these ghosts. They don't all become... I don't know what he says, like physical forms or whatever.
Most of them just move on. Most
yeah.
of them just go to heaven.
These are ones that have had traumatic deaths, and that's why they're still hanging about.
And they're inherently violent.
Yeah.
They only know violence.
Yeah. Whatever. But she gets killed very quickly. She's been in league with Cyrus the whole time, and she betrays the gang. and dies shortly after.
Yeah.
And that's when we have the revelation that Cyrus has kidnapped Arthur's kids and put them in this big, like... It reminds me of the thing from Event Horizon.
Mm.
The big, like...
spinny...
I don't even know what you call thing. It. Gyroscope thing.
It's a big gyroscope.
And by sacrifice... Oh, what is it? Arthur's going to become the 13th ghost because he has to kill himself for love. And he's going to kill himself to save his kids. I don't know. Some bullshit exposition reason.
Yeah.
But he actually manages to jump, like, through the gyroscope to save his kids after fighting off Cyrus. And then Radiga, the babysitter, plays some music.
Yeah.
Like, mucks about with the decks.
Spells that are on the cassette. Yeah. Yeah. She's on the ones and twos.
She is on the ones and twos. She's on the Wheels of Steel.
Mm.
And that mucks up the plan, and then Cyrus gets gotten by the ghosts. The ritual doesn't get complete, and then the house explodes.
Yep.
And that's it. The ghosts wander off into the night, presumably.
I guess the ghosts just escape
to cause
then.
Havoc.
Yeah.
But that's it. It's such a weird ending.
Yeah.
It's such a weird film.
It's a very weird film.
It's not a great film.
It's not good.
Yeah.
I honestly don't even have that much to say about this film. It's like there's so much nothing in the middle of it.
There is. I cannot emphasize how little happens for the entire middle section
of
this film.
Such a big spell of this film is just wandering around.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm blocking the microphone there while I was talking.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's just they're just kicking about the house.
They basically had this concept, I reckon. Apparently 13 Ghosts is a remake.
It is. It was a William Castle film, yeah.
I didn't realize that. I presume it's not with the same 13 Ghosts.
Not as far as I know. Yeah. I don't really know anything about the original.
No, neither do I. But I presume they had this concept in their head. Apparently James Gunn contributed to the script.
Oh.
There you go. So they had this idea that, you know, we'll have a film with all these unique little... What?
Scooby-Doo! James Gunn did the live-action Scooby-Doos.
It's all coming together.
They were good.
They had this idea for all these unique ghosts, and they were going to show off all these uniquely designed ghosts and the production value on all these cool ghosts. And then they kind of worked a plot in around that. But then somewhere along the line, the idea of actually showing the ghosts got lost because they just went so overboard with the editing and like weird special effects.
Yeah.
That they just kind of lost what it was they were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if it had just been a generic early 2000s film where they're fighting 13 unique ghosts, I could kind of be on board with that.
It probably would have been better, like, if they had just done that.
Yeah, but they try and add in all this convoluted lore and the stuff with Cyrus, which just nobody really cares. It's supposed to be like a big reveal. He's still alive. And it's like, I forgot that he was in this film at the start. I don't know.
Murray Abraham really needed a new car, I think.
I think so, yeah.
He needed that paycheck.
He did. So it's a bit of a disappointment, to be honest. There's potential there. And those are the kind of films that bug me the most. Because there is something there. They just didn't capitalize enough on this solid premise that they had. And they cocked it up, didn't they?
I'll tell you why this film was so disappointing for me. Because Matthew Lillard is a fucking delight in absolutely everything.
He really is.
I love that man. And that's not to say that he's the only good thing in the film, but he
kind of is
carried that film for me.
Yeah, that seems to be a pretty consistent criticism of the film.
Yeah, It really felt like a lot of the elements of this film were, you know, mediocre at best, or at least poorly executed. Like,
yeah.
The effects are good. You can't see them behind all of the absolutely god-awful editing.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing. The creature designs are really cool.
Yeah.
They just don't show them.
Yeah. The concept, I think, is relatively interesting. The idea of, like, inheriting a house, and it was, like, the person collected ghosts. There's a collection of ghosts in the house.
Yeah.
And now they're loose, and it's part of this big thing of who is the 13th ghost. That's an interesting concept. This film doesn't really get any points for it, because that's just taken from the original. Like, that stuff is still... It is taken directly from the original film. That's basically the only thing I know about it, is that they share those plot points.
Also, the fact that it turns out to be a huge trap,
yeah,
just feels unnecessary. We could have had a film where it is just about this... The house was used to house ghosts, and in doing something, in reading a passage from a book, they've accidentally triggered this ritual that requires a 13th ghost and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't need to have this big convoluted plot twist at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, you were criticizing.
I was just going to get back onto it that, like, yes, there are elements of it that are good, but are either tainted or, like, I can't really give the film much credit for. But the one thing that I can give the film a lot of credit for is that Matthew Lillard is a fucking delight, and I absolutely love him, and he's great.
He is just... He just gives it his all, doesn't he? All the films and shows I've seen him in, he acts. Mm-hmm. He just acts. And he just goes for it. He gets completely lost in the roles. And it's just so fun to watch.
Scream.
Like, he's so good.
He's so good in Scream. The Scooby-Doo films, he's great in those.
Yep. Punk.
SLC.
SLC Punk.
I've not seen it, but I've heard that it's quite good.
It's really sad, but he's so good in it. Yeah, he's just... yeah. Like you said, he's a fucking delight.
He really is.
The fact that we have a longer paragraph on Wikipedia for the ghosts and the ghost descriptions, it would take me longer to read this out than the time it gets in the film showing each of the ghosts. It also has more of a description than the entire plot.
Yeah.
Which should tell you everything you need to know. And it's really unfortunate. It is. Because, yeah, they're cool. The ghosts are cool. Mm-hmm. Creepy ghosts are cool. Violent ghosts are cool. Ghosts with no clothes on are cool.
Yeah, I guess.
And I want to see more of them. Not with more clothes on. I mean, like, I want to see more...
You want to see more of the ghosts physically.
Yes.
You only see a little bit of the ghosts. You want to see... all of the ghost.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is accurate.
Yeah.
Not just the boobies.
Not just the boobies, but also the butt.
That is, yeah.
You know, one thing, while we're just talking about the ghost designs, I don't know how much input they had on the designs, but, like, the practical effects in general were done by, and I think their production company was called KNB. It was Berger, no. Nicotero, and Kurtzman.
Nicotero?
Greg Nicotero from The Walking Dead. He's probably the most famous one, but Howard Berger, who is his longtime partner, and Kurtzman, whose name I can't remember his first name, the three of them worked together for quite a while. They had a production company together. They did The Evil Dead 2 early on, and then, like, a bunch of other stuff. They've done, like, a lot of famous films.
Greg Nicotero, right? And he's the first time I ever heard his name was tied to The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since then, in just about every horror series, he's contributed something.
Yeah.
Whether even if that's just like a documentary or behind the scenes featurette or something, but he's been so wired in to all these horror films for so long. Mm-hmm. It's wild.
Yeah. He's locked in.
I'm gonna slap you.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. But, like, yeah, him and Howard Berger met working on the special effects for Day of the Dead.
Right.
Greg Nicotero was in Dawn of the Dead, I think.
He has acted.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I might be thinking of someone else. I think he had, like, a little cameo in Dawn of the Dead, because he lived in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And they just got a bunch of extras for Dawn of the Dead of people living in Pittsburgh. And then he went on to work with George Romero.
Yeah.
And was like properly did a lot of the practical effects.
So he worked with Tom Savini as well a few Tom times. Savini, yeah.
On Day of the Dead. Yeah.
It's cool. I respect. If only we could actually see more of his work on this.
Yes, that is genuinely that's the big issue with this film. Yeah.
So after much consideration, I decided that this was the worst of the two films. I gave this 2 out of 5. I don't know if I would say I had more fun watching it. It felt slightly higher production value than Bones.
Uh-huh.
But it was less enjoyable because of its flaws. Like, the flaws in Bones, a lot of them you could kind of overlook or justify, whereas here it became harder and harder, especially as you watch the film and it kind of dragged. I was getting more and more frustrated and struggling to find reasons to keep watching it.
Yeah.
Especially when they were consistently not showing the 13 ghosts. The entire... That's why I'm watching the film.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. Yeah. Matthew Lillard's great. He's the best thing about the film by a fair mile. Mm-hmm. The ghosts, if they had actually been shown, would be a close second. But... very little redeeming qualities, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating. Very frustrating watch.
I'm right there with you. I also gave it 2 out of 5. And I agree with you pretty much entirely. Those were my big gripes with the film. It's very poorly edited, and that takes away so much from the actually good designs and practical effects. You just can't see them. They do have quite a lot of CGI effects that look quite bad, because like you say, this is 2001. You know, CGI didn't look particularly good then, but it's got some quite big, flashy CGI set pieces that just don't look good, unfortunately.
The big, yeah, really, the big gyroscope.
Mostly the bit at the end with this big machine. Yeah.
In saying that, for 2001, I don't think it looks awful.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not defending the film. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not really comparing it to anything else at the time. I'm just thinking in general that it looks bad. But maybe that's just because.
I mean, by today's standards, yes, 100%.
Maybe I'm not being fair to it.
Then actually, no. Tell you what. Then again, thinking about Event Horizon, the gyroscope in that
looked a lot better.
Looks a lot better.
And that was several years before. What, 5 years? 3, 4, 5 years before?
Yeah.
You know what else is a gripe of me for this film? It's not called 13 Ghosts. It's called 13 and Ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, I did notice that.
It's a dumb name.
It's very silly. It is technically 13 Ghosts, but it's stylized as 13 Ghosts.
It's listed on Letterboxd as 13 and Ghosts.
So dumb, man. Why?
I hate when films do that.
Yeah. Very frustrating watch. Very frustrating. The worst kind of film. At least when a film is just bad, you can just hate it. Uh-huh. You can just be like, it sucked. End of story.
Yeah, this was bad and they shouldn't have made it.
No, this was bad and they should have made it.
Yeah, that's my point. Like,
oh, sorry.
When a film is terrible, you can just say, like, they should not have made this
film. Yeah, exactly.
This is stupid. This is a bad idea.
But here it's like, it has so much potential.
They fumbled it.
Fucked it. So, yeah, a bit of this or that this week. You know, Bones was probably the better film of the two, but then Radiga gave a better performance than Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
So.
It's a mixed bag.
Mixed bag. Now, on with the show for next week.
Mm-hmm.
We got a good one. Now, how did we phrase it exactly?
I don't know.
Was it giant monsters? What have you got for us?
I'm gonna go with them. It has an exclamation mark at the end, so you have to make sure to exclaim it.
Them.
Them.
Okay.
It's not them. It's them.
You're going with them.
I'm not going to do that the entire time. Yeah, what? I'm going with them.
What is them about?
Them is about 1990. It was 1954. It came out
54.
54. This is an old film. This is a classic.
Okay.
Came out the same year as the original Godzilla.
Okay.
And has a relatively similar premise in that it is like this sort of atomic era. Everyone was kind of freaking out about like, what is all this nuclear testing going to do? And it's about nuclear testing has created a giant monster.
Them.
Or giant monsters. the thems in question are giant ants.
Okay.
I don't know how good they're going to look by today's standards.
Okay.
But some people say that even today, like, they don't look too dated. They do, like, you can extend your disbelief and still sort of...
54 will be black and white, yeah?
It's black and white.
Okay. That probably adds to its charm.
Probably does help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to watch it.
Cool. That's a new one. And we've not done an old film for a while, so yeah.
Yeah, this will be the oldest film we've done for a little while.
Yeah, sounds good. You're going to hate me, I'm afraid.
What are you going to make me watch?
Do you still have a phobia of spiders?
Absolutely, yes.
Cool. I'm going to go with Eight-Legged Freaks.
You are an absolute piece of shit. I fucking hate you. At least you watched Dead of Night of your own volition. You and your fucking ventriloquist dummy phobia.
You can pick Dead Silence if you want.
Pick Dead Silence. I could, but that's not going to be good, is it?
I do have a backup, right? But the reason I picked that is because I've not seen Eight-Legged Freaks, okay. Whereas the other film I have seen, and I feel like a new film this week. How much do you not want to watch it?
I will watch it. I will be willing to watch it, but I am probably not going to... I'm going to have to, like, half watch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if I sit with my eyes glued to the TV, it's just going to make me incredibly uncomfortable.
Okay.
It's just going to gross me out too much.
Cool. I think it is, like, it's, like, early 2000s bad CGI. I don't think it's that.
Yeah.
It's not like Arachnophobia, where they actually used real spiders.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll give it a whirl.
You look a little bit shaken. I'm really sorry.
I'll give it a whirl.
The look on your face has soured ever so slightly.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Big creature, big monsters.
Yeah, they are big monsters.
Yeah,
there are lots of good choices. There are some other ones that I was tempted to go for.
There's actually quite a few.
One that I was tempted to go for, which very highly regarded but not especially well known, partly because it's not in English, is The Host.
Oh.
Or Host, Bong Joon-ho's South Korean film from like, what, 2008 or something?
Yeah, 2008, 2009 or something.
Excuse me, it's not like proper like kaiju levels giant monster. It's not like a Godzilla.
No, it's just like it lives in the
big
river, doesn't it? Near the town.
Yeah.
I need to watch more of Bong Joon-ho's.
That'll be an interesting one. I don't know if I've watched any films that he's done other than
Have you seen Snowpiercer?
No, I've not.
It's a bleak watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, Parasite's amazing. And is it Memories of Murder? One of his first films, I think, is very well regarded.
Yeah.
Along with Host as well. So maybe have a Bong Joon-ho theme.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
Could Parasite? It's not really a
horror.
You
could call it a horror. Like it's the horrors of capitalism.
Yeah.
I think, really. But
yeah.
The horrors of class inequality. But, like, that's a real-life horror that we can all get behind.
Yeah. Also, the scene of the basement.
It is scary.
That is pretty creepy.
It is unsettling. Like, yeah. I watched that film not really knowing what it was about. And partway through, when it, like, it takes a real tone shift, and I was like, what is going to happen?
Yeah.
What are they going to find in that fucking basement?
Yeah.
It's genuinely scary. You don't know what's coming.
It is pretty creepy.
That's also easily one of the best films I've ever watched.
Oh,
I think across the board, it is a phenomenal film.
I really hated seeing people refuse to watch it because it was in Korean. I was like, man, get over it.
It's insane. Was it Bong Joon-ho that said there was a thing about like the inch high hurdle of
that was
subtitles?
It. In his Oscar acceptance for Parasite. Yeah.
God, he's so cool.
He is. He's amazing. I love him.
Also, was it him that made his Oscars kiss?
Probably. That sounds like
there's
something cute
of him
that he would
his
do.
Oscar's kiss. Is that him? I might be thinking.
I want else. Him and Guillermo del Toro to do a film together, if they haven't already.
Hmm. Yeah.
They seem like they'd be good friends. They'd make a good horror film.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Giant monsters next week. That'll be fun for it me.
yeah. I can't believe you're making me watch. It's my birthday next week, and you're making me watch Eight-Legged Freaks.
Sure is, man.
You bastard.
Sure. Happy birthday, buddy. Enjoy it.
Especially giant bugs. We're just focusing on giant bugs.
It is. Yeah, yeah. It's just giant bugs.
Bugs.
Oh, well. Yeah. Have a good week, everyone. Say happy birthday to Ewan on Twitter.
Yay.
Tell him, give him birthday pats
yep.
on his back. And then watch Eight-Legged Freaks.
Yeah. Ooh, with everyone's favorite Arquette.
Patricia?
No, the other one. I don't know how many there
David.
Are.
David.
David. No. Dennis Arquette.
Dennis. Coming soon to a theater near you. Eight-Legged Freaks starring Dennis Arquette.
All right. Bye.